Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stay glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in since they going back to showing Action Tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the Anime Action Fan Sanctuary with Tom providing.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative right here on the Absolution Network. I'm, of course, your primetime host, Thomas Primetime Mattis. And I welcome you to episode 44 of Tom's Prerogative. On this week's episode, we kick the ties and light the fires as we review what is known pretty much among the anime community, for those who remember this movie slash series of OVAs, as the Top Gun of anime. That is Macross Plus. And more specifically, the version that we are watching today is the movie edition of Macross Plus, which has no English dub whatsoever. There's the OVA of Macross Plus, which is split into four episodes, and then there's the movie edition, which has 20 minutes of additional footage, which is the version I have, and we're reviewing today. And that has no English dub. It was brought over here and just subtitled, so yeah, I'm going to be saying Japanese names and completely screwing them up and pissing off Japanese people today. Perfect day. But welcome back. This is going to be one of those hard shows to review, or I should say movies to review. Mostly because, again, this is a bit of nostalgia, once again, from my childhood. As I've talked about before, I started watching anime in 93. This was back when I actually only probably 6 months earlier moved into the apartment I was living in. This goes back to when I lived in a place called Atrium Apartments. We lived there for 5 years. The first three and a half, was in the very last apartment of the apartment complex. Like, we were absolutely at the back. And then, like, we didn't get a better deal and moved to, I guess, what was considered a nicer apartment towards the front, and lived there for 2 more years before we then moved somewhere else. More importantly, we moved into a house that we lived in for a year before we moved back to another apartment complex. That's a whole different story. But those, the back apartment that we lived in the first 3 years, was where I first started watching anime. It's funny because, trying to, when I was doing research and trying to think back when all this stuff fit together. Because, yeah, it was definitely in the bag. I fit things through, it's either through anime or through sporting events, or should I say a sporting event, as in the 1994 Stanley Cup win of the New York Rangers. Because I was a huge Ranger fan back then. I'm not as huge as I am now. I am a Lightning fan. And if the Lightning are out of in the Rangers there, go Rangers. Again, besides the point, I'm rambling down the nerds, what I do. But, you know, that and, of course, you know, Christmas events. And my, the beginnings of my anime watching were two particular things. One is one that I think a lot of people my age probably experienced, and that was, you know, anime at 3 a.m. on Sci-Fi Channel. This is where I watched the first Tenchi movie, Galaxy Express 999, Demon City Shinjuku, the first Appleseed, the original Appleseed movie, I should say, Venus Wars. But the other was, back in the day, there used to be a channel called Movieplex. I had Time Warner, but I would imagine, you know, Comcast back in the day and other television cable companies of the day probably had it as well. Movieplex would eventually become Encore and then spawn into bigger channels as it is today. You could probably find Encore on your, if you have cable, that is, if you're not a cord cutter, on, again, not that I'm making fun of that, but if you have cable or Verizon or DirecTV, whichever you have, Encore is usually, at least where I see it, is usually before HBO, but that's a whole other story. But they would show anime. You know, they would split their day, you know, Wednesdays with Westerns and so on and so on and so on. Thursdays, I believe it was Thursdays or Tuesdays, was action, and they would show anime occasionally. And it was mostly manga entertainment stuff, now that I look back at it and sort of trace the company to know it, because it was things like Pat Labor. It was things like the second Macross movie, Tekkaman Blade 2. Trying to think of some other stuff. It's like, but another one of the things that they also showed was Macross Plus. And more importantly, they showed the OVAs of Macross Plus. And that's where I first saw this series that had a movie edition that we're watching. So it is a bit of nostalgia for me. I would later, of course, many years later, in the mid-thousands, pick up this movie edition, and I've had it since. I really am a huge fan of the Macross series. It's something that, you know, I kind of really hate that because of dueling interests of different entities, you know, Harmony Gold, just to name one, that the Macross series has really never been allowed to take footing in America like Gundam has. Because the Macross series is a very, very well thought out, very wonderful series of different animes. You know, Macross 7, Macross 0, Macross Frontier, along with, of course, Macross Plus, which was the 10th anniversary. And, of course, I know there's, you know, talks about the 30th anniversary, because, you know, I believe Macross Frontier was part of the 20th anniversary. It's a very good series, but again, because it's part of Robotech, New Harmony, Gold apparently has a stake in it, along with some other entities, and it's just really hindered ownership rights and stuff like that of the actual Macross series getting out. I believe the original Macross has gotten out due to ADV. I know the first two movies, Macross, Do You Remember Love, Macross 2, I believe Manga Entertainment still has the rights to them, along with Macross Plus. And that's pretty much it. It's because of those things that where you've seen a franchise like Gundam, where, you know, again, Bandai does have the exclusive rights, don't have to worry about other entities, and just brought them to America, how it became much more bigger than Macross, and I find that to be a real shame, to be quite honest. But we'll get more into the whole Macross franchise, its legacy and everything, a little bit later. Let's get into our review. Let's go over synopsis. The year is 2040. And it's been 30 years since the conflict between Earth and the Zentradi has ended. The UN Spacey forces are looking to replace their VF-11 Thunderbolt Veritech fighter. So they launch Project Supernova, which is to test two planes, the VF 19 in the VF, 21. And they choose two young, expiring pilots. That's a whole different movie. One is the sort of loose cannon Isamu Dyson. And the other is the Mix Zentradi Guide Boldman. Isamu pilots the VF-19 and Guide pilots the VF-21. It turns out these are childhood friends and have some very heated history with each other. Things get even more complicated when a friend of theirs, a young Feng Long, enters, as she is the producer of the hottest idol in the universe, Sharon Apple, a AI hologram. And things really get heated up. While all this is going on, Sharon starts to develop a sort of malevolent personality due to a AI chip implanted by one of the other creators of her, who wishes to see her be the greatest thing in the world. This causes Sharon to take control of the Macross SDF-1 battleship along with other technology. And Isamu, Guy, and Young must find a way to stop her. So, with that being said, let's dive into Macross Plus. Let's start talking about music, and the music here, done by the legendary Yoko Kanno. You know my feelings on her. Just, with the exception of probably Umburo Uematsu, is probably the greatest musical composer in Japan to come out of Japan, and is a real legend, not just in Japan's music legacy, but of the world's musical legacy. Just the beautiful work she pulls out, and it's no more prevalent than it is here, especially in the opening theme. The opening and closing theme for Macross Plus is a song called Voices, and it's just this very beautiful, haunting thing, you know. Dun, 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 da da da, na 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 na, da 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 da, da da da. It's just, it's hauntingly beautiful. It's a song that, if there was an English version, I could see, and I'm completely blanking on her name, but the lead singer for Evanescence singing. Because it's got this sort of haunting sort of quality to it, that where it's so beautiful, but that you can feel the sadness in it. And I love, one thing I love about the song and what it really does for this movie and for OVA for that matter, is that it really presents this sort of multiple tales, because it's a song that can be taken for different aspects of the plot of Macross Plus, because you do have that plot, as we'll be talking about later, of, again, AI over human instinct and human quality. You know, which is a classic tale that's been done over and over and over again. But, you know, again, the voices, again, talks to those, you know, those human qualities and why it always triumphs. But the other is also of, you know, friendship past. Because, and again, and that is the main imagery used during the opening and stuff like that. Again, of these three friends, the things that have driven them apart, and yet when they used to be together. Of course, I'm talking about Isamu, Young, and Guide. It really talks to all these multiple aspects of the plot, and I love that about the song. I love that about the music. It just makes it even more beautiful to me, and it's a wonderful both opening and closing song for Macross Plus. Now let's talk about the overall score of the movie. Of course, Yoko Kanno did it, and I apologize for probably switching between movie and OVA, because the same score is used in the OVA, unless you're talking about the English version of it, where, I guess in a certain episode, they pulled some music and, like, used music from... I'm not going to get into it, it's confusing, but more importantly, I'm reviewing the movie, so hopefully I'll be mostly saying the movie, and again, I apologize for this. I'm catching myself saying it, and it's like, But the overall score of the movie, again, like I said, by Yoko Kanno, is just gorgeous. I love the different musical influences in this score. I mean, there's traditional aspects of it. Isamu sort of theme is just great adventure into, like, flight type of thing. You know, it's the type of adventurous theme you would think to hear when you think of somebody flying. It really, you know, has that feel to it, and it's really prevalent. But again, it doesn't overtake the characters. And a lot of that has to do with the great character designs and the great character story. A score can, you know, really overtake something if there isn't a strong character design and a strong character story. But at the same point in time, you can have a really strong score and strong music that, to an extent, really blasting if there is a strong character and a strong story to really match the strength of that score. And you have it here with Isamu. I also like that he kind of has two things. There's that adventurous theme, and then he sort of has this sort of Western gunslinger theme going with him as well. There's the very stoic theme with Guide, and the very melancholy theme with Young. More of that being more voices. Sort of a more instrumental piece. That really adds to this melancholy of Young. And then, of course, you have all the Sharon Apple stuff, where you hear that initial song. I'm completely messing up the song, but it's... The first thing I think is, like, wow, it's Madonna. You know, and when I say Madonna, I mean, like, 1980s, early 1990s Madonna, you know. I'm a virgin, you know, type of Madonna, you know. The Madonna that had... Woo! Well, you couldn't see what I did, but I put my hands on my chest and... the spherical cones that Madonna once wore that she made famous. I probably should have said that instead of going, whoop, because that would have been a better explanation, but that's besides the point. But definitely that feel of Madonna is in there, along with a lot of different tastes of sort of modern pop music. You know, again, Sharon Apple being an idol. Again, this idol aspect and the effect of music on the populace as sort of propaganda that the Macross series is well known for, bringing it to full effect here. So definitely love that aspect of it. But that's more into plot. We hear the music is great and just an interesting choice to go with an actual full English track for really the big song of Sharon Apple, that being Information High, which is just an powerful song. And we'll talk more about this. Could talk about it more in animation, and probably will. The only thing that goes against it in the movie is that it really overpowers the stuff that's going on. The imagery is beautiful, but I just think it would have fit a more action sequence better than the place they put Information High in the movie is in sort of more of this sort of montage traveling scene. It's the moments before Isamu and Guide eventually reach Earth, as it's told in the story, they're going to try to find the X-9 Ghost, which is another aircraft that's part of the Supernova project that also uses artificial intelligence to try to phase off against it and show the higher-ups that humans can triumph over a machine. And so it's this sort of traveling montage alongside with showing Sharon hypnotizing the whole crowd that's at the 30th anniversary and taking over control of the X-9 and the Macross SDF-1 fortress. So it's this sort of weird place, and it's beautiful, and it kind of works. I just think it would work better if it was during an action sequence, because the music really denotes action in it, and I think it's a shame that it's not used in that more action sequence. Not that there isn't a little action sequence in it. I mean, like I said, it takes place during the travel, and more of the end takes place as they reach Earth, and they start to go through the Earth defense grid, but it stops and changes to another score once Isamu fires missiles. So, again, the placement of that score, I think, is a little bit off. But, you know, like I said, not to say the music isn't wonderful, because it is. The music is just incredible, and I love Information High. Let's move on to animation, and let's talk about the overall style of Macross Plus. And, I don't have the character designer in front of me, but again, that 90s style, that great sort of realistic and 90s style of animation that I like to point to for everybody that says, oh, anime is all about big eyes. Just the more realistic looking faces and the really well proportioned of the face where everything, you know, fits perfectly. Just great, you know, character designs, great mech designs. Again, that you can tell this was hand-drawn type of style of movie. It's just, and again, there's use of CG in it, you know, but more importantly, with buildings and stuff like that. And it's, this is how good, it has aged a bit, because in watching this recently, it's like, wow, it's starting to look really CG now in certain places. Though most of where it really looks CG works to an effect because it's more computer simulation. In particular, there's a, when Guide is chasing Isamu through the city towards the end of the movie, it's supposedly what's happening within sort of what the computer is showing back at him rather than what he's actually seeing outside the cockpit. And so it works in that effect. But there are places where the sort of CG pops out, namely when, again, Sharon is flying. And it's not one of those things to where, oh, they didn't really put any effort into it because they wanted you to be focused on Sharon. I think it says more of a matter of, because it's been 15 years, you know, as with anything, it ages. But the art is beautiful. Again, it has that great sort of mid-90s style to it, that mid-90s realistic style that you would see out of Macross. But again, it has that great sort of... It's the type of animation I think of when I think of Macross. And I apologize for sort of stumbling there. I was looking through my notes. The character designs were by Masayuki. I'm trying... I couldn't find any information on him. I think he was new to the series, but again... they had brought a lot of sort of classic Macross sort of staff members like Shinjuku Watabe and Koji Morimoto back to, because again, this was the 10th anniversary of the series. With that, let's move on to character designs. We'll start with the protagonists. I love everything about the character designs here, because I love how the character designs, again, tell the story of each character perfectly. We do some who, again, being that loose cannon, that sort of free spirit, everything about his character design really denotes that. Again, the short blonde, sort of sandy hair, sort of the very sort of snickering smile that he has. That I love so much. It really denotes that idea of the sort of free spirit. And you really feel that in his character design. And really, that's the thing for all the character designs here. All of them really denote each of the character's individual personality. And really help enforce that personality. Again, like I said, the loose cannon, sort of free spirit of Osamu is in his character design. And really helps strengthen his actions through the movie. The sort of melancholy sort of feel of Young is there in her design. Somebody who's grown up and sort of given up on her dreams. You can really feel that in the character design. And at the same time, being just gorgeous and beautiful. Guide, that sort of white knight feel, that sort of nobleness to him is in it, but at the same time, again, this him being a mixed, of both a Zentradi and a human, again, you have that nobleness there, but you also have that sort of underlying darkness to him that's there as well. And it's something throughout the movie to where, he's constantly being shown as the good guy, but you always have this sort of in the back of your head, there's something there, just a bit dark about him. But we'll talk more about that darkness when we get the plot. All of this is just beautifully shown within the character designs. And then you have the antagonist in Sharon Apple, which really has two aspects of her design. There is the actual physical form of Sharon Apple, which is a blood... I can't believe I'm blanking on the name. I'm trying to remember the name of the computer from Space Odyssey 2001. And I apologize, folks. as I, stall for time. But the other aspect is the AI form, and just this different beauties, very evident of what a pop idol would be. And again, with all these different dresses that she wears and everything like that. And, again, really allow these different things. You know, she's a mermaid. She's this. She's that. You know, really, again, capturing that sort of pop idol, pop culture, that especially in the 90s, was so prevalent of this ventures of sort of the music video. But then again, and again, thank you guys for sticking with me on this as I quickly looked it up, because I, for some reason, there are days where I do a review and I don't care about names. And then there are days where it's like, for whatever reason, I have to know the name. I can't believe I forgot the name. But the sort of physical form of Sharon in that sort of black sort of stand really denoted of Hal from 2001 A Space Odyssey, which is a name I was completely forgetting. I had to look up real quickly. As I peel back the curtain. But yeah, that feel of, just like how that sort of cold, dead, sort of black box. No emotion, no anything. Other than this sort of sweet voice and sort of the flickering of that red light. Again, it touches on sort of the same things that made Hal such a great villain, as far as in his character design. And again, we'll talk more about this with acting, but the acting as well adds something even more to that. Let's move on to mech designs. And I love the mech designs. Doing the study of, one thing to talk about mech designs and talk about also within the overall score is, as it turns out, Eden was based off several places. One of them being Orlando, Florida. It's very funny to sort of, look at, Eden and sort of the highway system and what's based off Orlando, Florida, along with several other cities, a lot based off San Francisco. Of course, New Edwards Base is based off New Edwards Base. But, also, again, the fighters based off actual, the VF-11 Thunderbolt, which has been used throughout the series, being based off the F-14 Tomcat and the F-18 Hornet. And, of course, these fighters actually being based off actual fighters, as I quickly look at it. Because, like I said, it's one of those days where I have to look up. I do know that the F-19 that Isamu flies, or at least I believe it is based off the F-22. And I'll look it up real quickly here. I do believe the F... The VF-21 is based off the Northrop VF-23. Or at least the design of that was heavily influenced by that. I believe the VF-19 was more based off the VF-22. Really, when you look at the VF-23, they look very, very similar. And I kind of find it funny that in here, the VF-21 loses, and eventually in history, the VF-23 lost to the Lockheed Martin F-22. So you have those actual physical plane designs sort of influencing these designs. And again, like I said, and then the Axe Ghost just again, has this very sort of space, sort of evil AI feel to it. And then all sort of the design of the FDF-1 Fortress, which is a classic design, instantly noticeable. But again, that sort of sense of realism that I love here with the mech designs. Just beautiful to watch. I love all seeing the little things here and that stuff. They're just beautiful to look at. Let's move on to action animation. And the action animation here is wonderful. More montaged in the movie, but still there. Just some great dog fighting scenes, especially the ending dog fight between Guide and the Ghost X9 is just beautiful, and just the different techniques being shown and everything really gets you into the action, and it also makes it sort of believable, them being in these life and death situations. Trying to find some more to say, but other than it was just great, because I just was really drawn into the action animation, just like I was really drawn into the mech designs and, you know, getting to look up what they were based off of here. Again, the action anime really draw me into the movie. And again, it's part of the reason why this could call the Top Gun of anime, because again, that action, the dogfighting aspect was very much like what Top Gun was. And then you have the special effects and the backgrounds. And both are really done well. Again, the CG effects here are starting to age, but, you know, all the different backgrounds and all the different influences, because you have New Edwards and you have the city of Eden and sort of the highway system and everything like that. Just such distinct places, you know, the forest that they're in where the dino birds are. Just create distinctive backgrounds and just wonderful use of special. You really don't even think about, oh wow, that's a special effect. It's so well drawn into the movie that these effects, you know, for instance, cannon fire and laser fire and stuff like that, just feel organically as part of the film. Just extremely well done, along with the backgrounds. They're all gorgeous, but they all don't, you know, as I, you know, usually say, you know, think about backgrounds and special effects when they're done extremely right and are perfect, is they're extremely, when you're looking at them specifically, they're extremely well done and they're gorgeous and they're beautiful. But when you're watching them as integrated in the movie, you know, really don't notice them because they're so well integrated. And that's what we see here. With that, we're going to move on. We're going to take a break, and I'm going to play you a couple of promos. And when we come back, we're going to get into acting and story.
In the decade of the 1930s, even the great city of Cleveland, Ohio, was not spared the ravages of the Great Depression. In a time of fear and confusion, a character emerged that would entertain and inspire millions of children and adults alike. He began not as flesh and blood, but as a simple line drawing. His comic book adventures thrilled millions around the world. The magic of radio gave to his name a breathless signature and sound. Then with television came a whole new generation to idolize his exploits. In the 70s, the world believed a man could fly. In the 80s, he was reborn in the comics. And the 90s saw his death, rebirth, and marriage. In the 21st century, he returned to the big screen and saw his origin changed and retold on several occasions. Through the decades, he has gone by many names. The Man of Tomorrow. The Last Son of Krypton. The Man of Steel. His strength is incredible. His name is legendary. His battle is never ending. Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound.
My name is Michael Bailey, and I host an internet radio show called Views from the Long Box. Superman is my favorite character of all time, and in 2013, he is turning 75. Because of this, a large portion of the episodes this year will be about the Man of Steel in a series I'm calling
Superman at 75, the celebration of a legend.
I'm going to mark Superman's birthday in fine style by examining all aspects of the character's history, from the comics, to the movies, to the television series, and beyond, both alone and with the best and brightest of the podcasting world. It may not be every episode, but the bulk of Views in 2013 will be all about the Man of Steel. He is the first and greatest superhero of them all, and he deserves no less.
Superman at 75, the celebration of a legend.
A series within a series, and the biggest birthday card a fan can give his favorite hero, only at Views from the Long Box. Views from the Long Box is a Fortress of Baileytude production. New episodes drop every other Tuesday over at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com, and for this series, over at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
Ready to form Voltron!
I am Batman!
This is a job for Superman!
Power Rangers!
Right away, Michael.
Autobots, transform!
By the power of Grayskull!
For the honor of Grayskull!
Hello. I'm the Doctor.
Charlie's Geekcast, coming January 1st, 2013, to www.charliesgeekcast.com.
And welcome back, and let's dive right into acting. As you know, I've shuffled up how I do things on the podcast, so this is where I let you know about what the cast was. The cast was Takumi Yamazaki, played Isamu Al Dyson. Rika Fukumi, played Young Fan Lone. Usho Ushizuka played Guide Go Bowman. Mako Hayoda played Sharon Apple. Megumi Hayashibara voiced Lucy McMillan. Tomohiro Nishimura played Yang Newman. Kenji Utsumi played Millard Johnson. And there's a joke I want to about my best friend so badly you don't even know. Urar Takano voices Kate Masu. Let's start off with protagonist acting, and I thought the protagonist did a wonderful job. I mean, your supporting characters did a great job, you know, that being Millard Johnson, Kate Marsu, Yang Newman, Lucy McMillan. They also, really being protagonists, all did a wonderful job in being great supporting actors. That also lent to the great acting. And I know a lot of you saying, well, it's Japanese voice acting. How can it's about emotion. It's about feeling what and making you believe in the characters on screen. You know, which is true for any animation. So it really doesn't matter what language on is, you know, especially when you have subtitles. You know, you can still feel the emotions that the actors are putting forth through their voice. Again, it's one of those things that just, how voice actors get disrespected, like that, you know, well, it's just their voice. Well, no, it's the emotion in the voice that makes you believe in the characters on screen. Again, that devil may care sort of free spirit attitude that, Takumi gives Isamu is just wonderful and makes him a great main protagonist of how you instantly fall in love and sort of like, you know what? It's very Maverick. You know, again, it lends credibility to, again, calling this the Top Gun of anime. Because when you look at those three characters, well, at least two of the characters, Isamu is really Maverick and Guide is Iceman. He really is. Young is not a, and I'm blanking on the name. I'm just gonna skip it. You know which character I'm talking about? The love interest in Top Gun. I forget her name. She's not the same character as that, but again, that melancholy feel of somebody who's given up on their dreams, really enforced again through the acting as well. Really enhances the character design. Just a great job of acting as the main female protagonist. Just this feel of somebody who's always felt, it seems like, caught between a rock and a hard place, as you see as the story progresses. One of my favorite actors I thought really gets overshadowed in this film that did a great job was Megumi as Lucy. Because in that, the Lucy character was just a sort of great character as, you know, somebody who sort of kind of, I don't want to say fell in love. She did, but it was sort of this, in that sort of whimsical type of way. But was really the only one among everybody to see what Osamu really is. And I thought Megumi did a great job of portraying that within Lucy. So overall, I thought the protagonist acting on all fronts was just wonderful. And then you had the antagonist, which again was Sharon Apples. And you know, I talked about HAL 2000 earlier. And it had this sort of coldness to it as well. But again, it was that coldness combined with a sort of, you know, familiarity. You know, and I think, again, being a girl's voice, it can, you know, lend that credibility to, you know, like somebody that, you know, sort of, there's a sweetness there combined with that coldness to the malevolent personality. You know, again, everything she's doing is for love. And again, as we'll talk about in just a second with plot, you know, an AI not being able to constitute what love is. And I thought Mako did a, or Mako, I'm really going to go into that stupid argument, aren't I? Oh, good. I can see the emails coming now. Like I get any emails. Anyways, but she did a wonderful job. Again, that sort of same feeling you get with HAL 2000. But again, with this bit of sweetness of this, you know, it coming from this AI that's also an idol. So I thought the acting, top to bottom, was extremely well done. With that, let's move on to story. And let's start off by talking about the overall plot. And, well, there's two aspects to look at the overall plot. One is that it is just a sort of action movie, which it really is. It is more action-based than probably a lot of other Macross specials and series are. There's multiple plots. There's individual character plots, but the really two main plots are, again, the action part of the plot is, you know, again, the test flight of, you know, the program, the Supernova project, you know, creating new jets. And you have the two test pilots who are human, but then, of course, unbeknownst to them till later, you have the AI plane in the Ghost X-9. And then, of course, you have Sharon, you know, Young with, you know, being the manager of Sharon Apple, and Sharon Apple becoming more and more independent. And really, these two overall main A and B plots, and we'll talk about the sort of, and like I said, the individual plots, which are like the DNC and all that stuff. But those two individual plots sort of combining with each other, along with the other plots, really to talk about this one more big story about, again, a story that's been told before and before. You know, again, you know, human instinct versus sort of AI. You know, again, which is better, AI or sort of human instinct, and what makes it better. And part of it is that it's always human instinct, because AI can't really, you know, it can formulate it, but it really can't comprehend the emotions that humans go through, because it's all about numbers. You can input emotions into it, but it really can't deal with them because they don't match up with the scientific numbers that computers and AIs deal with. And again, we see it here. Again, Sharon Apple, you know, being, you know, outfitted with the new chip that allowed her emotions to, you know, really be enhanced, and her being introduced with Young's feelings of love that she has for Samu, and not being, and well, taken to the natural level that somebody who really doesn't have the comprehension of sort of those human instincts and human emotions and all that stuff would take it to, and doing whatever she wants to try to get his love to make him happy, to the point to possibly killing him. And again, the Ex Machina, again, human instinct, now, you know, Guy eventually defeating at the cost of his own life, the Ex Machina, again, all these triumphs of sort of human instinct and human emotion and what it means to be human over AI. But what really enhances this plot, as I kept hitting to, is the individual character developments and sort of those individual character plots within the movie. And the mainstay of that is sort of that mystery. They hint at it, and you think you know it, but then it gets to the end, and you know it. You know it's coming, but they do a great way of hiding what really happens in the story between Guide, Isamu, and Young, and what happened in, you know, their history. And you know, you do start off thinking, oh my, well, he just stole his girlfriend. He was just stole everything, but. Again, that realization at the end of, no, it was Guy who, like, lost control because he thought he was taking her from him. And, you know, while Young loved Guy, she loved Isamu even more. Again, just that slow build-up to it that really worked perfectly. And it's this, it really creates this great sense of, through this movie, this how horrible human emotion and how it can break somebody and everything. And it sort of aligns that maybe AI is better than humanity, but in the sense that at the end, it is humanity that always triumphs over sort of computers because of their ability to come back, you know, from the brink, which computers to an extent sometimes can't. And it's just this great build in their character, you know, a lot of, and just enjoyable character moments with it. It always goes back to Sex and Boobs with me. But, you know, like one of my favorite Isamu moments is, again, just, again, that free spirit. And, you know, when Linda, you know, Lisa, and I know what, why am I screwing up? I should know the name by now. Lucy. I'm horrible at names. But when, you know, Lucy asks him, what's it feel like flying? And he does this, what looks ridiculous thing of where he's like, takes his hand and creates a planet and is flying. And and does all this. And basically, there it's Deuce Lucy. And it's like, you know, it's Jet Fighter. Jet Fighter requesting a tower to take off. She grabs his hand. Like, if the Hotshot pilot will wait till I get in the shower, permission will be given. And he goes, ow! It just, the look in his face, I'm like, the only thing missing from this is animal crackers. And Aerosmith in the background going, I don't want to die tonight. I just want to feel your feeling. Because I have no idea what the words are. But you know, that, you know, the individual, you know, again, a lot of the character development that's grown, you know, in the discussions between Young and Kate and, you know, and Guy, and all these great aspects, all these little character developments, and the character plus, it really, again, it enforces that whole point of humanity versus AI and why humanity always wins. And then you put in some great action sequences, which are just awesome. It creates a really, really good series. Overall, this was the 10th anniversary of Macross, and its place in the Macross franchise is one of the probably the best entries into the franchise and its continuity. As such, by the fact that it was probably the last real Macross franchise to be brought over to America. You know, because we don't have Macross 7, don't have Macross 0, which came after this, nor have we really had Macross Frontier brought over here. At which I still have to finish Macross Frontier. I haven't seen Macross 0 because they are hard to attain. And it's, again, it just establishes why the Macross franchise is a good franchise, and really how unfortunate it is that companies like Harmony Gold, because of their interest in their Robotech franchise, and some other individual entities, are preventing, really, the Macross franchise from being brought to America. And it has the same ability to be like Gundam is. I think Gundam will always be the better franchise, because I think there's a lot more connectability with the Gundam franchise. And again, I talk a whole lot more probably about this in my first season of Robotech episode that I do with my good friend Donovan Morgan Grant. We talk about that. But, you know, at the same point in time, Macross franchise does have the ability to be highly successful if brought to America. And with the thing of Toonami being brought here, Macross Frontier, I think, would be an excellent series for Toonami. Because, again, the Macross franchise has always been this sort of dogfighting, sort of action franchise that sort of shows how, again, music is used to sort of, not to just propaganda, but it's used as an inspiration and among other things. And always has this sort of a great combination of music and action and animation. And I think Macross Frontier, along with Macross Plus, would be great on Toonami. So at the end of the day, Macross Plus, the movie edition, is a wonder. And along with the OVA, though again, like I said, watch the movie. I want to include the OVA in here, but I just didn't have it. But the movie edition of Macross Plus is a wonderful movie. It adds a lot to the original OVA and really fleshes out things that have gone on. As a sort of classic story of humanity versus AI, the character designs are great, the mech designs are great, the art is just beautiful, the music is gorgeous, haunting, and just perfection. At the end of the day, Macross Plus gets a rare 5 out of 5 from me. There are minor little things, but really, they don't affect, you know, really the only thing I could really see wrong with this movie whatsoever are two things, and that is, again, my own, one is a personal, you know, I feel that maybe Information High should have been moved back a little. And then, of course, the fact that the CG has, as naturally would, start to age just a little bit. But those are so minute and really don't take away from how great this movie is. So, like I said, 5 out of 5 for me. So, that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Remember, there are several ways you can contact the show if you'd like to contact us. You can leave us an email at absolution132@yahoo.com. That's absolution132@yahoo.com. You can also leave us a comment at our Facebook page, which you can find by searching the Absolution Network on Facebook. You can also leave us a comment on the actual site itself, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. You can, and while you're at it, please remember to check out, as I stumbled there, and I apologize, folks, I forgot, I didn't have any more other places you could contact the show. But also remember to check out all the other 132 production sites. This includes the soon-to-be-returning, in a couple months, Shaft Plus, Mean Gene's anime reviews that is right now currently on hiatus, Random Redbox Reviews that you can find at www.randomredboxreviews.com, of course the Otaku Momentum that's right here on the Absolution Network, and more importantly, or should I say, also, wow, that really came out horrible, but do also check out my other podcast, which includes Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com, And, of course, the Comic Book Crazy podcasting site, which includes Comic Book Crazy and Hexcast. And the soon-to-be-returning Comic Book Pitch, because I'm finally going to get started back on that. Which you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, also while you're at any of the sites, remember to check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site. This includes Michael Bailey's Views All Box, along with others. Podcasts that he does, like Batman, Bailey's Batman Podcast, and From Crisis to Crisis, Brad Douglas's Spider-Man Crawl Space, Steven Syker's Major Spoilers Podcast, and of course, Scott Gardner's Two True Freaks, that you can all find on the sidebar of the site, along with many other of our friends who we support. And that is it for this episode of Tom's Rockative, episode 44. Next week is episode 45. And we're going to have a bit of change of pace here. You know, we went with a harem to how we had an action, and now we're going to go more slice of life, comedy, classical music, because we're going to cover a series that I love dearly. That was one of the few great series to be put out during the really horrible period of anime production between 2005 and 2009. That being Nodame Cantabile, the first season. So, until next time, my Toonami generation, stay golden.
What should I be doing?
Find cover. It's gonna get too dangerous for you in here.
Desert. Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off, and until we meet again, you know the rest.